The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Mark Amtower of Amtower & Company, which is entirely responsible for its content.
This is Amtower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center, with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to Amtower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. I am here today with the Alliant team, Casey Kelly, the program director, Richard Blake, senior technologist, and John Cavadias, who is the Alliant 2 program contracting officer. Gentlemen, welcome to the show, or more precisely, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mark.
And welcome to the studio this time. So
pleasure to be here.
Thank you. So let's, Alliant 2's coming down the pike. Casey, let's walk through what this means to the contractor community and to the government buying community.
Sure. Thanks for that, Mark. So since we last were on your show, we've released a second draft RFP just last week.
300 pages, I hear.
Correct. It's about 300 pages. So there's two separate second draft RFPs, one for Alliant 2 Unrestricted and one for Alliant 2 Small Business. Both were issued on FedBizOps, Federal Business Opportunities, were basically asking or allowing for the public to provide feedback and comments through November 30th to those draft RFPs, which incorporate some of the changes and considerations that we've made from all the feedback we've received from over 250 face-to-face one-on-one meetings with industry, from multiple meetings with our customer agency working group, and you can imagine thousands of emails that we received to the Alliant 2.
Better you than me.
Yeah. Correct. So the feedback we've received thus far has been pretty positive. We've been here for about a week now in D.C., many events to provide an update to the public on Alliant 2, Alliant 2 Small Business. Hopefully what we're sensing that the progress we've made from that first version to get closer towards the final product is in line with both our customers and industry partners. But that's where we're at.
So you say you're here in D.C. for a whole week this time. Tell people where you're normally based.
So we're based out of San Diego. Our office is in downtown San Diego, and we're here this week meeting with various key stakeholders.
Okay. And speaking at several events, I think.
Correct.
Yeah. So when do you anticipate the next, when are you going to go into your silent period?
Yeah. So I'll transition to John. I'll let John, he's a contracting officer, and I'll let him officially speak to that. Go ahead, John.
As soon as we complete this radio show, Mark will be in silence.
No calls.
But right now we can talk. We're aiming for spring of calendar year 2016 to release the official RFP. The draft RFP is essentially where we may make some minor adjustments to it. We don't expect to make too many changes, but then that's based upon the feedback we receive. But so far in our speaking engagements and our Q&A, we haven't been receiving much in the way of suggestions so far. So
not even on the leading edge stuff?
No, not even on that.
That's kind of surprising, isn't it?
Well, let's clarify. You know, I mean, when we say that, so we've been in town since Tuesday. We've spoken at three separate events, you know, so it's a selective group. So that's not all comprehensive for all industry.
Right.
So, you know, we provided two new brand new email boxes for feedback and comments. So far, it's going to take some time, as you alluded to digest the 350 pages where we've made some minor modifications. I think the tone I want to portray is, you know, is your audience should have seen now, we've demonstrated through this second draft RFP that we've considered and we've really evaluated some of the suggestions that were meaningful that map to what our customers' needs are. So sure, if there's questions, specific questions about the leading edge technologies or the product service codes or anything in terms of source selection, We absolutely want to hear those. I think that the tone I want to phrase thus far is we've received from the industry community a lot of appreciation, positive comments, that open dialogue, that open feedback, and the consideration we've given thus far has been supported.
Okay. Richard, let's get, John, let's get back to you. So, you're asking for definitions in these things. You've asked industry for, you know, their, I guess, narrower definitions of the leading edge. Do you get the same feedback from government? Are you looking for the same feedback from government? Oh, I guess that would be more you.
Yeah. John. So this is Richard, and yes. So we've reached out to, since you're focused on leading edge, let's go there for just a little bit. So this is probably the fourth or fifth iteration of our version of leading edge technologies that industry has seen, ranging from interact posts to official RFIs to a first draft RFP and now the second draft RFP. So contributing to the evolution and maturation of what we're listing currently is the 10 leading edge technologies have been all the industry input. We have a customer working group that's been formed that we vet with. We have a DoD Tiger team. I've attended the Gartner Symposium. I've been in touch with Bloomberg and other data folks out there. Some industry SIGs and special interest groups that our technical team attends both in San Diego and on the East Coast. All of that has contributed to the current list of leading edge technologies.
Okay, but you pared it down, right?
We did. We pared it considerably down. So far, the only change we're currently considering is the 10th one, the virtual networking leading edge technology, which we're simply going to change the label and a bit of the nomenclature and expand that out to software-defined networking, which in our opinion includes virtual networking and all the other software-defined elements that currently exist in the marketplace.
Okay. So what do people need to know on the front end so they can, or the contractors especially, on the front end to make a determination as to whether or not they should be pursuing this?
Well, we provided a self-scoring sheet. Since this is an objectively rated procurement, a contractor can go through Section M6 and take a look at what we are scoring and go into a template, a self-scoring template, which is in Section J, and they could determine if they have the attributes which the GSA is looking for. There are no minimum scores. We haven't set any. We don't want to. On the unrestricted procurement, we're going to award 60 plus ties, which is a 50% increase from the original draft RFP. And on the set aside, we'll be awarding 80 contractors plus ties. That's one way. Another area is that we're looking for contractors in this pool under this GWAC that are able to participate in this GWAC. And by participate, I mean willing to put in offers. And we set objectives here of three offers per year. And that's an objective. That's not a solid number. There's acceptable quality levels. It could be less than that based upon their ability to bring in task orders under the contract. We also set production goals, which are the total dollar value of the task orders awarded to the contractor. Those are more liberal, but our concern is that we're trying to provide our customer base, which is all federal agencies that have an IT budget, quality proposals. Competition is very important is a very important goal to federal agencies. Not just adequate competition, but effective competition, meaning three or more offers received per RFP. And this is part of the goals of all of federal government acquisition, because the end goals are actually economic efficiency, cost savings, innovation of transformational technologies, improvements in quality of services, and the opportunity for the government to acquire performance improvements, and those primary goals could be achieved for our customer. They're looking for this based upon our requirement for every contractor in that pool to participate in the GWAC.
Okay. You want to add anything to that, Kelly?
No, I think right now, because we've provided a comprehensive A to Z draft RFP for the public to see, which is pretty rare and unique still, we're given ample
300 pages, yeah.
We're given ample lead time for contractors out there to determine if they want to invest bid and proposal dollars fully, if they think they have a competitive chance to get a seat on these contract vehicles. So we're doing as best we can to be as transparent as we can by providing as much information in advance as humanly possible based on the feedback we're getting from both customers and industry.
Okay. So not only are we trying to encourage potential offers for putting in a bid on this master contract, but we're providing them with the contract execution language too. What is expected once they're among the Alion 2 pool of contractors, and based on that information, they can make a determination if they want to go on or not.
Richard, do you have a thought?
I do. So, and thank you. So this is a self-scoring model, and everybody knows that by now. But there's apparently still some confusion as to what their internal process should be. So, thanks for the opportunity to maybe clarify that a little bit. Our hope, our vision, was that industry would go through their library and select those task orders that subjectively, in their opinion, in internal counsel, met either the PSC grouping definitions or the LET, the leading edge technology grouping definitions. The language doesn't have to be exact. We're not, if it's not coded with a D317, for example, in FPDS-NG, and they feel that an integral component, a significant component, a meaningful component, select any adjective you'd like, is represented in the complex ICS type of solution that they participated in, they can cite that. And then we offer up a template that allows them to give us narratively their reasoning for citing that, even though this was coded as a D399, other. We believe it meets the cybersecurity, for example, because of this element of the task order. Get a CO or a core, and that's a new element to this second version, is that we're allowing the core to affirm their thought as well. And then we'll do our due diligence and hopefully we all agree and they get to keep those points. So it's a purely subjective process on their part, giving us the ability to objectively analyze all of the documentation that they're giving us to so that we can agree.
Cool. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM. We will be back right after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM. I am Mark AmTower. I'm here with Casey Kelly, who is the Program Director of Alion 2, Richard Blake, Senior Technologist, John Cavadillas, who is the Procurement Contracting Officer. So this show is all things Alion. And to that end, Richard, let's talk about these leading-edge technologies. You're going broad in the definitions. Why?
Well, first of all, we need to talk about what is a leading-edge technology. And we get some confusion in the marketplace between a leading-edge technology and a bleeding-edge technology. And I think we discussed this the last time we spoke on your show. But just to reemphasize, so a bleeding-edge technology would be those things that are in the forefront. They're being developed in a garage. They sound great. We may have some early adopters on the curve, but they're really not proven technologies in the commercial
world. Let DARPA play with them.
DARPA play with them for a while. So that's not our purpose here. The leading edge technologies, on the other hand, are those that have graduated out of the bleeding category and are being adopted, especially by the federal government. And we did some research and found that all 10 can be cited on federal acquisitions. It's also important to note about that list of leading edge technologies that it has absolutely nothing to do with the scope of this contract. It doesn't translate into the scope later. It doesn't become part of Section C. It's an evaluation criteria, right, John? That's what we call it,
evaluation criteria. Right, it's a capability factor.
Capability factor. So, and our purpose for that, our thought, our vision, whatever you want to put on that, is we're looking for contractors who have kept their finger on the pulse of that bleeding edge, and also kept their finger on the pulse of that leading edge, because the requirements for government, we feel, and I think the entire government feels, on information technology are going to escalate over the next 10 years. It's certainly not going to get simpler. The velocity is certainly not going to slow down. So we're looking for contractors, especially on the unrestricted, that are staying in touch. So if for instance, you haven't been in touch, and I'm not saying none have, but if you haven't been in touch with cybersecurity, you've probably missed the train. It's a little late to get to ramp up and become an industry leader. And that's what this contract is for, is the industry leaders in IT technology as a whole, as defined by the Federal Enterprise Architecture. The Federal Enterprise Architecture is what defines the scope of this contract and will continue to define the scope of this contract.
Okay. So we were also, between takes here, discussing the various outreach programs that you have concurrent.
Yes. So outreach. We have a DoD Tiger team that was formed. We have a customer user group. We've always had a shared user group under the Alliant One contract. You know, Casey, you're probably better prepared to speak about our outreach efforts over the last 7 years.
Yeah, so let me connect the dots and give you a real live example here. We're talking leading edge technologies. How are we trying to validate that list that we feel pretty strongly now, if we've parsed that down, that's the right list as Richard defined? Well, several months ago, we put out a formal request for information to the industry community on federal business opportunities with a starting point of the leading edge technologies that we're considering as evaluation factors. And we wanted to get specific. Give us, you industry, what type of you companies out there have experience doing this type of work? And what we got was validation. We got validation that there was a healthy sampling within the industry partner community that actually perform that type of work today, that kind of substantiated and validated the direction we were going. So that ties to the big outreach thing. Outreach, we set up the Interact Community website early on, about almost 2 years ago now. 7,000 plus members are out there. We leverage Interact to post questions, to post, supplement the formal request for information that we post on FedBizOps. We've set up two.
Is that restricted to participants, contractors, OEMs that are attached?
No, and there's no restrictions.
Okay.
Anybody can be a member of that.
Cool.
We've set up a customer working group. We have 40 separate, we have approximately 40 plus members on our customer working group across between all DoD services, Army, Air Force, Navy, Marines, and the civilian agencies, NASA, Department of Homeland Security. We leverage them. These are current customers that are familiar with the federal acquisitions, obviously, GWACs, obviously, and also Alliant Line Small Business, to not operate in a vacuum, to bounce off them, to validate where do we need to go. And that's that outreach that we've been doing now for quite some time has been very effective.
Okay.
So what we learned in some of that outreach with regard to the leading edge technologies in the first iteration is we were putting too much emphasis on it. And they asked, because this is a self-scoring model, this contract. And mm-hmm. John can get into all of the intricacies of that. But so the leading edge technologies no longer carry as much weight as they did in the original. We've kind of shifted that weight in the scoring model over to the product service code area, which defines the actual work that we've experienced under the Alliant One contract. We have three areas, the Group 1, Group 2, Group 3. There's also some new scoring elements having to do with IDIQ experience, government experience, size, complexity, and scope, agency reach. The broader you are across the agency spectrum, the better you'll score on this contract. So we've made some shifts in terms of the scoring elements and the evaluation. But again, none of those affect the scope of the contract. They don't translate in.
Hopefully your audience understands and gets from this, how genuinely committed we are to really, help the taxpayer through supporting agencies in that specific lane, federal IT services, to make it as easy and as fast and as accessible for all agencies to get what they need to perform the mission.
Okay. Any thoughts, sir?
I would simply say that we can develop any requirement we want, but if industry can't deliver the requirement, then it's useless. And So that's why we outreach as much as we do, and we verify, we think, we verify, we ask, we vet, and it's worked out very, very well.
Okay. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM. We will return after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM. I am Mark AmTower. Nobody else volunteered. I'm here with Casey Kelly, Program Director for Alliant, Alliant 1, 2, 3, 4.
I like that.
Richard Blake, Senior Technologist, and John Cavadillas, who is the Procurement Guy. That's your new title, Procurement Guy.
That's what I am.
There you go. Draft 2, how's it evolved?
Great question. So a big thing different is we've increased the number of primes on the Alliant 2 Unrestricted from 40 to 60. That wasn't a simple, easy decision. We really gave some careful thought and consideration on that topic to make sure that we're trying as best we can get the right primes. So that was a really major difference between and the evolution of the draft RFPs. A second big thing is we've kind of provided greater clarity on how past performance will be evaluated on Alliant 2 and Alliant 2 Small Business. I'll let John maybe touch on that a little bit.
Sure. We had a lot of feedback from the first draft. The first draft was a kind of vague, and so we decided to fix that up. We had asked for, positive past performance, you'll get credit, and it was just a single figure of points that would be awarded. And if not positive, then you'll get no credit. So we knew it was kind of vague. So what I did is I developed a quick fix to that, and this is how it's going to work. An offeror can submit up to 7 projects for their prior experience based on the PSC codes. They could submit 5, 4, 3, however many they have to submit. So based on what they how many projects they submit for review, they can earn past performance credit too. And this is how we're going to look at it. We're going to look at each project that was submitted. We're going to allow points for positive, negative, or neutral past performance. Now, that's based on the individual submission of the project. This is how it works, because I did get a lot of questions concerning neutral. What is neutral? First, let me start with positive. Positive is a rating of satisfactory or above. That includes very good or excellent. We grouped that. Anything that is marginal or unsatisfactory would receive a negative rating, which receives no points. The reason why we're not going granular here is because there's a lot of subjectivity that I know I have found in other contracting officers over the years in the CPARS and the PPARS system that goes into rating a contractor's performance either as positive, either as satisfactory or very good or excellent. So I want to give the benefit of the doubt to the offerer rather than just going exactly to the rating of the CPARS of the assessing officer. So I am grouping, and so far I think I have been able to communicate that well enough to industry. I'm not getting any questions on that, but I am getting questions as to what is neutral. Neutral is a rating where there is no past performance that has been conducted that has been assessed on prior or present experience. It's not uncommon that there will not be a record of past performance on every contract awarded and completed. We do provide a survey, and in that survey, the offerer can send it out to the contracting officer. And if it was a commercial contract, they could send it out to the company and get a survey filled out, and that survey will end up coming to the contracting officer during the source selection. Once again, if there is no rating, there will be no deduction of points. Points will be received as they are for positive, the same number of points. Why is that? Because the most important, it's a requirement of the federal acquisition regulations. There's no provision to deduct points from an offeror who does not have a record of past performance. We're also rating past performance as not in terms of points, but as part of a responsibility determination. It's easy to get these days. There's a number of items that go into a responsibility determination, such as financial capability. But when it comes to past performance, it's very easy for any of us on the government side to just Google the company's name, and we could find out if there really is a record of past performance on their contracts. And so that was a big change to date.
Other changes include we've changed cost reimbursement experience from being originally a pass-fail to now being a scored element. We've provided greater clarity on the labor categories themselves. We've provided ordering contracting officers greater flexibility with respect to labor categories at the task order level to make it as easy for them without prohibitions, restrictions on how they can use this contract vehicle. We reduced the project threshold on the unrestricted for contractors that are bidding on Alliant 2. We've reduced that threshold for product service codes from $10 million down to $8 million. We've created greater opportunities to score points on both breadth and depth for both with respect to both product service codes and leading edge technologies. We've revised the requirement of a signature to validate a project from originally having to come from an ordering contracting officer to now being allowed to come from a contracting officer representative as well if they can't get the ordering contracting officer to sign for leading edge technology. This is a big one, Mark, for your audience. I think we got a lot of feedback on this. So we're allowing an individual contractor who is on a joint venture that was 100% accountable for all the work involved in a project awarded to that respective JV to claim credit for that project if a majority of the JV members agree in writing that JV agree not to submit the same project for experience on a separate offer under the name of the JV, since the project submitted will have already been used. You know, we're trying as best we can to take into consideration these unique variables to still make sure that there's accountability in there that maps not just who's doing the work, but who's responsible for all that comes and being a prime contractor and doing federal acquisition work. So that's a big change. And the last two change that you've seen is we've eliminated on the Alliant 2 unrestricted the total small business percentage goals as a scoring metric. And we've added now IDIQ experience. If you're a contractor out there with IDIQ experience, we've added that as a scoring element. Purpose being, we want to give consideration for size, complexity, scope, because that's the type of work that's being performed to date through 7 years under Alliant.
Right. Okay. Let's touch a little bit more on that JV side. I was at a conference recently, and I had a couple of people come up and ask me, you know, they've been approached, should they join JVs? So on Alliant 1, was your experience that there was an adequate number of joint ventures that were successful on that?
So on Alliant,
and I don't know what an adequate number is.
Yeah, that's a fair question. So on Alliant 1, the current Alliant contract, I believe there was only one on the Alliant unrestricted joint venture. There may have been two, very successful.
Okay.
Alliant Small Business, I believe there were a few out there. Do you know, John, happen to know? I don't. Off the top of my head, I don't.
No, I don't know the number.
But I'm confident that those that were joint ventures have been successful that bid and got onto the contract vehicle. The key thing, the feedback we were getting originally out of the gate on the JV issue was that, you know, what if we, you know, want to establish a new JV, you know, to put the best of the best out there for all the, you know, the latest and greatest technology to force a team together to be reckoned with, to, you know, to be the best service provider. Get it. Got it. However, there's some risk associated with that in terms of the complexity involved of delivering now and coordinating all these best companies if that JV is starting from scratch with no past performance, right, no prior experience as a JV. And so that change we made here to allow an individual member of a JV that opportunity, if they did do the work on behalf of the JV, but they were the one company that did that work, to allow them to get credit for that. I think that's a significant move we've made to take into consideration this issue as it relates to the JV community.
Okay. I think the people who were asking that question obviously had not been part of a JV before. So their trepidation is, does it actually work? And how hard is it to put together? I don't know. I didn't answer the first one. I said, you know, putting it together is you know, largely a cultural issue and a technological fit. And these are never easy things.
Correct. I agree.
So we're going to take a break. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. We will be back right after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I am here with the Alliant team, Casey Kelly, Richard Blake, and John Cavadillas. And I want to know the, you know, GSA has four major vehicles out there. What distinguishes yours from those lesser vehicles? No, I didn't say that. The other vehicles.
Thank you, Mark. That's a great question because it is certainly contemporary. So we're being asked this a lot. So we have schedules. We have OASIS. We have the ICE, the Enterprise Infrastructure Solutions contract that is currently, I believe, out in RFP, the official RFP. Mm-hmm. And then we have Alliant and Alliant 2. So schedules, that's the easy one to figure out. If you need materials, schedules is the place to go. So if I need to buy 2,000 station sets or 15,000 something else's, then we have the schedules. OASIS professional services, if you need consultative engineering type of services, if you're trying to prepare or understand where we may be going with our enterprise, that being the from the agency's point of view, OASIS is where you go for those professional subject matter experts. The tough one is when, because of the convergence between telecom and IT and GSA's anticipation of that convergence becoming even narrower, we have the enterprise, the ICE contract, as folks like to call it, and Alliant too. So until very recently, we've been struggling with what the messaging should be, but very recently in discussions, again, with industry, if you have an infrastructure update, if your major overarching requirement in your agency is infrastructure to support some new widget that you're going to bolt onto your network, that would be, in our opinion, or at least in my opinion, an ICE play. Because you need to go in and overhaul at the bottom level of the stack. You need to go in and overhaul your bandwidth, your transfer, even the method that you're networking. If you're still in the old days of RJs and all of that, you haven't moved on over to software-defined networking, that type of thing, then that would be where you'd go. So as you're developing that solution, you're developing that requirement. If it begins at the infrastructure, if it begins in the basement, ICE is the place that you need to be, all the way up and taking you all the way through their integral and necessary clause all the way to the final conclusion of the task order. If, on the other hand, you're past that and you're doing bolt-on solutions-based work within your agency, and maybe that does require a boost to infrastructure, or a slight change in infrastructure, even a major change in infrastructure, but the overarching nature of the task order is that of a solution, then Alliant and Alliant 2 would be the place that you would want to speak. At the end of the day, in the bottom line, the decision lie with the OCO, the ordering contracting officer of the agency, mm-hmm. who's meeting the requirement of the requiring authority within their agency. And we're glad to offer guidance and help in that area. But that's how currently, in our current speak, in our current messaging, we're dealing with the messaging. Why have the integral and ancillary, why can we cross over into solutions and ICE, and why can we cross over a little bit into telecom with Alliant? Because we're still, I think, as an agency and certainly as a program, aiming towards giving the ordering contracting officer a single touch point for these major complex IT solutions. In the past, I don't know so much in the recent past, but certainly in the past, as IT has matured, there have been many separate contracts to do many separate components to get you to the end zone, to get to that final solution or that final infrastructure update that you were looking for. And if things go south, and in IT they often do, and fingers start pointing, caught in the middle, the entity caught in the middle is the federal government and the taxpayer. So it's more efficient, more cost-effective, and just a better practice to have a single touch point running the show, to have have someone conducting the oversight for the three-ring circus that sometimes becomes an IT update and upgrade. So that's why we have the planned overlap, and it was planned. That's why we have the planned commonality within our scopes of work, and it was planned. But there are some definite delimiters, and I think we've explained those.
Okay. The issue that comes up perpetually after a contract award is, I just heard about this. I want to play. So, John, you're going to build in an open season factor for this. Is that accurate?
Yes, it is. In fact, we have a provision in Section H of the draft RFP, and anyone out there can go ahead and read it. Because we also have an off-ramp provision based upon the performance-based requirement of contractor engagement to produce dollars and to participate by responding with proposals. Some may realize down the road that they're not willing to continue, or they're unable to compete. So we would simply off-ramp that contractor. We don't know how many will be leaving the contract, and we don't know really how much competition will ultimately come in. And competition is what the federal agencies are looking for under this GWAC. They want to see multiple proposals from their RFPs. So we did provide an open season that allows the ability for us to add additional contractors onto the master contract, if of course it's in the best interest of the government. There's no set schedule that's being established for an open season. We want to base it upon performance of the entire GWAC. So the determination will be based upon a number of factors. The most important is if we're getting an inadequate level of competition on our customer agency RFPs, that's an indicator there's a problem. If we're getting too many competitive one-bid awards, that's an indication that we need to look into why does this exist? That's a big problem in federal government acquisition right now. Is it because the capabilities, the technical capabilities within the pool aren't there, that have the demands of the agencies changed as technology changes? So those are triggers for us to initiate an open season. It could be any time during the term of this master contract. So it would be announced on the Federal Business Ops at any point, and once again, it depends on the going ons of what, you know, competition, of satisfying the customer for us is the federal agencies, making sure their IT services solutions are satisfied. They're getting alternate proposals that they could make choices on, and they're also receiving good prices because of competition.
Okay. Casey, wrap this up for us. What do you want to leave people with here?
Well, I want to, so we're leading by example. You know, I want to put a shout out to our other GWACs, GSA 8A Stars 2 GWAC. We're doing an open season right now, an on-ramp right there. So we're leading by example with that, you know, to put in place if and when we decide under Line 2 to exercise that open season option to add additional primes. We'll have some lessons learned from that experience as well there. So I think I want to demonstrate that we're trying as best we can, you know, to build best practices, learn from experience, and be a leader in the organization. We're excited. You know, we're really excited. We're getting closer towards the final RFP. We're excited in the position that we have in the federal acquisition community, as we're sensing now a reduction in contracts. You know, we're trying to reduce contract proliferation, contract duplication. We don't, you know, we're a fee-for-service organization. There's a fee to use this contract vehicle. We know that there's choices out there. So we have, as best we can, to listen to the market, to invest in research and development, and what do the customers need, what do they want out there, to the end design, build something that we think there's a market for agencies to pay for to use. And it's exciting. We think we're onto something successful to build off Alliant and Alliant Small Business. So I just want to encourage your audience, if they haven't yet, and if you want to get additional information, it's real simple. Alliant2@gsa.gov. You know, that's a website we've set up a while ago now. On there, there's other links to other websites that they can get additional information on. And I want to encourage them to go there and use the appropriate resources to ask questions that they may have. And we look forward to working with everybody as this progresses. Thank you.
Yeah, and thank you. Thank you guys for making time to come in. You can do the shortcut that I do. Just go to gsa.gov. There's a great big old search box in the upper right. Type in Alliant, and gee, it comes up. Every time. I like when that happens. Consistency. Again, thank you for coming in. We have had Casey Kelly, Program Director, Richard Blake, Senior Technologist, and John Cavadillas, the Procurement Contracting Officer for Alliant 2. This is not my day job. If you need help on the marketing side of government, particularly if you have a GWAC or an IDIQ, any open-ended vehicle, I advise on the marketing side. I advise on leveraging social media, and we help companies develop that subject matter expert platform. So give me a shout, mark@federaldirect.net, and thank you very much for listening to AmTower Off Center.
You've been listening to AmTower Off Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.